Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door.
Hi, welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori.
And today, we might sound just a bit funny because we are having to record from two different places. but we felt like it was really important to share this information today and just to get this out into the stratosphere. I don't even know if stratosphere is like a word. I use it a lot. I'm not 100% sure on that. But it's anyway.
Big spaces.
Big spaces. Well, then, yeah, that is the, that, yeah. That is the right thing.
Yeah, it is.
So we kind of briefly shared, a little bit just about what this past week has meant, and kind of all the different connections that we've put together, but we wanted to be able to unpack that and talk about it, on a podcast episode. So, obviously if you are following us on social media or you're caught up to the podcast, you know that we just got back from 6 days in Boston, Massachusetts, where we had an incredible week, had the opportunity to present to DCF, Department of Child and Family Services staff and leadership, as well as be at a roundtable with policymakers and the general counsel for DCF and veteran social workers, lots of boots on the ground people, and also people who can affect change. So very, very, very cool week, which we'll get to in more detail. But then at some point during this week, we kind of sat back and realized that this very week, the last week of October, 2 years ago, some really, really bad things were happening. So this is 2 years ago, pre-podcast. The things that happened in this time frame, literally this week, 2 years ago, were much of what went into the decision to ultimately start a podcast. The threats were extremely intense, and like I said, some bad things happened to me that we haven't really shared publicly for a number of reasons. Mostly for my own privacy and just my own having to process what happened. But we did call the police at that point. We went through all the steps that the police recommended. We did all the right things, did everything that we knew to do. And ultimately, we had a victim advocate from Niagara County tell us that when victims are too upset, they're often not able to be helped.
We also had some just frustrating experiences in general in the process of trying to walk out the steps that we were told to take.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, we're very intentionally not getting into too much detail of that, because we do kind of appreciate and respect the fact that, you know, people are overwhelmed and doing the best they can, but this was not an experience that was helpful. Let's just say that.
No, that is the nicest way that you could possibly put that. And I love you so much.
Gotta find a nice way to say that.
Yeah, that's like the softball toss.
So I just want to say on my end, like, we had talked a long time, Kate and I, about how and when to continue to try to bring the authorities in to help. And Kate, your position has always been, they really never helped me before, so why would I beat my head against that wall again? But you, in this case, you were desperate enough to try that.
Yep.
And so for it to not go well, was, again, all the more reason why the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, we were desperate. I was desperate, and it was, a bad situation that was terrifying and scary, and, looking around going, now what, right? Like, this has happened, is happening, and
will continue to happen unless we can figure out some other thing.
Yeah, right. That was, you know, I guess part of the reason also with going to the chapel, that was mm-hmm. It was a huge decision, part of the decision to start the podcast. And then obviously, you know, we've talked about the January 2nd, so this happened in October, and then January 2nd, David Drake from the chapel at Cross Point, the largest mega church in Western New York, stood on stage and said how thankful he was to be in community with my parents, even though he knew of all the things, and he knew the full disclosure, and he knew who they were. He was still grateful to be in community with them. So,
I don't think we had really started talking about the podcast after that last week of October, but we did start feeling like we are going to have to figure out something to do ourselves. But we were just trying to make sure you were safe. And then Dave Drake stood up and said all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And our do it ourselves thing was to go to the chapel, because my parents were very involved there, and because my mother was counseling victims of sexual assaults and sexual abuse. And so that was our first, we'll do it our own damn selves, you know. Mm-hmm. And then that obviously epically failed. And so, yes, January 2nd with him doing that, that was the catalyst that was kind of the final straw of like, okay. And, you know, we've talked about this on our anniversary episode. We've talked about this a lot of different times, but it really started as when it's like so terrible that if you don't laugh, you'll cry. Right. So it was that mm-hmm. where it was like, we should start a podcast. And then it was like, oh, we should start a podcast. Like, should we? So yeah.
Because what else were we going to do?
Right. The podcast, obviously, you know, started in February and then led us to lots of different things. But for the purposes of this episode and the significance of this particular week, the podcast led us to Cornerstone Church coming to us and asking, who in our building do we need to be concerned about? We told them at that point as much as felt safe to tell, knowing that there was a lot at stake, right? I didn't know John Sherholds from anybody. And I did know that their board was stacked with family members of offenders, and that they still, their leadership really hadn't changed. We wanted to think that it had, because John Sherholds was different, but, and we also had no idea, you know, they're asking us, who in our building do we need to be concerned about? I have no idea who goes to that church anymore. Right? It's been 20 plus years since I've been there. So we really didn't know, but yeah, I don't know.
So I want to say that I have gotten pushback, grief. It's been used to discredit us, or to attempt to discredit us, that I wrote an email in response to someone asking about safety issues at Cornerstone. I wrote an email that basically said that, to the best of our knowledge, Cornerstone was among the safest place in the area because of the security protocols that they had already put in place before the podcast. And that has come back at us as like, well, okay, how can you say that when you're also saying that, you know, there are known offenders in this building? That was me being my optimistic self, and also honestly believing that John Sherholds was a person who was creating a change in that building, and that the security protocols they had in place made them safer than other places. It kind of goes together with the things we've said before of, please don't ask us about, is this church safe? We don't know every known or unknown, frankly, offender in all of Western New York. Mm-hmm. So this was me saying, well, as far as we know, because of the safety protocols, this building is as safe as any other, right, perhaps safer than most.
Right.
So I know that that has, I don't know, confused some people, but you're also talking about a snapshot.
Hindsight is 2020. So this was the point in which Cornerstone came to us and said, who do we need to be concerned about? I am going to say this person's name. Lori may want to cut it, but the reality is that we are currently in a public lawsuit with him. So, I don't think that it's,
doesn't matter anymore.
So Cal Kern was one of the first offenders that we had shared. We gave him a disclosure. We told him that he had sexually abused me as early as the age of 4. John confronted Cal, told him that his funding would be cut from the church because Cal is a missionary and is being funded by Cornerstone Church. Shortly after that, which brings us to the importance of this past week in October, Cal and his wife showed up to Trunk or Treat, a children's event.
We have to highlight the fact that this was shortly after Grace had been here,
yep,
for their first interview.
Yep.
And suddenly, I mean, it was within a couple of weeks.
Yes.
He was there,
yep,
at a children's event.
Yes. He was at the children's event and no one asked him to leave. So this week, 1 year ago, began this huge battle between us and the church and Grace. I was literally at work and I remember being like, absolutely not. And I called John on the phone and said, yeah. I didn't know what to say when they showed up. You know, Sherry, his wife, had signed up and it didn't occur to me that Cal would come with her, which is like, okay. So this started this huge battle of what should the church be doing with named offenders? Are they allowed to come to church? Are they allowed to be at children's events? Grace at the time refused to tell the church what they should do because they saw themselves as like a neutral party in all of this. And Cornerstone refused to take action without Grace's say-so. Finally, after this particular battle 1 year ago this week, Grace said to, they made the recommendation to Cornerstone that any named offender should not be allowed to be there. So we had sat with Grace for multiple interviews. We had given them all of our corroboration. We had given them all of the information. And they recommended to the church, yep, this is really serious. And so therefore these men should not be attending this church and they should not be around children. So that was 1 year ago today.
So for clarity, 2 years ago, this same literal week, it was terrible things happen. 1 year ago, this same literal week, it was this fight to keep a named offender away from children's events.
So we are still staying safe every day. This week, we were in Boston doing all the things that we have talked about that we were doing. We were meeting with DCF staff. We were training people on what to look for and training people on the statistics and what it looks like and how to be a safe person. The reality of, yeah, we're still trying to stay safe because, unfortunately, they let all of the named offenders back in the building. And, unfortunately, the named offenders and non-named offenders would still actively seek to hurt me if they had the opportunity. But also, what about the greater good? So what about the kids still walking into Cornerstone and Bible Presbyterian Church and the chapel? Like, what about that, right? So that's really what we're here to talk about today, is the fact that 2 years ago, yeah, absolutely terrible. A year ago, fighting the fight face to face with these particular offenders. And this year, we're focusing on the greater good, right? We're kind of putting that over there and saying we cannot smash our head against the wall anymore with churches like Cornerstone or Cornerstone directly and do all of that. What we need to now do is create a safe space, create an army of people who will be here to catch the disclosures and the kids and to make a safe space for these kids when they ultimately come out of there and need help.
Dr. Michael Salter is an Australian criminologist who has written a book called Organized Sexual Abuse. And he's done a ton of research on this subject. And what one of his quotes that kind of we hold near and dear is,
if you are unable to believe that this type of abuse happens, you will miss the red flags when they're standing right in front of you. Something.
And so we hold that quote near and dear because we feel like that is significantly our mission. That we are here to let people know that this kind of abuse does in fact happen, and it happens more than just to Kate.
Yeah.
It happens more than people would ever, people don't even consider, including people in the child protective world. This is outside most of the awareness. But the statistics are pretty overwhelming. So in 2016, the Canadian Center for Child Protection, together with the United States, I think in the UK, began an international survey of adults whose images were found in child sexual abuse materials. So basically, now they can use facial recognition to identify the children who are in child pornography. And they sent a survey out to those people who they've been able to find to ask them about the experiences that they have had. 58% of the adult survivors said that they were victims of multiple offender of abuse. 82% said that their abuse started with a family member. 53% of the people that who said that their abuse started before the age of four also said that their abuse continued into adulthood. 53%.
Yep.
There are a lot of people out there that it's not just Kate.
Nope, definitely not. And sadly, like you said in the very beginning of all of that, was that the average age of disclosing is 52 years old. That's disgusting, people. But the reality is that the reason, I believe, the reason why that's true is because we have not created a safe space or a safe world for these kids to disclose this type of abuse.
Or any abuse.
Right. I mean, if they have tried to disclose, it may have been a partial disclosure. And then the reason why the average age of disclosing is 52 is because we have not, as a society and as a world, made it a safe place for people to do that. I have to pull this up on my phone because I literally just actually tagged you in it on Instagram and I don't even think you saw it yet. It says, so Nate, I'm going to really mess up his name. So just go check out our Instagram if... said it was never your responsibility as a child to ask for help. It wasn't your responsibility to explain what was happening or know who you were supposed to tell. People would rather blame you than sit with the injustice of what you endured. You were a kid and it wasn't your fault. And that resonated not only for me as a kid of like, yeah, it wasn't because of me, it wasn't because I didn't do a good enough job, but also now as a professional in this world where we're training people and training professionals to be the safe space, it is that feeling of it is not this child's fault or responsibility to do it right to get help. Right?
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Breathe. But there's this huge gap in kind of what our experience has been prior to now, screaming into the wind when nobody wants to hear anything we have to say. And then we go to Massachusetts, where we sat with veteran child protective workers, 20, 30 years into the field, people who swim in the realities of the awful things that people do to children every day. And they wanted to know what we had to share. They were willing to say, oh my gosh, there were people in tears listening to us because they were thinking, wow, we have a lot of work to do to show up for the kids that we have missed right along. And there were people there that were actively saying, okay, I'm already thinking about a couple of cases that I would totally have missed this if we weren't sitting here.
Yep. Yep. It was said to us that, you know, DCF workers are really trained not to take their work home and like 4 o'clock comes and they, you know, and that's for their own mental health and sanity, of course, but so many of them came to us after the training and said, I went home and combed through old cases because I know that I've missed this before. I've seen it. Like what you're saying makes sense and I've seen it, but I just didn't know what it was. I didn't have a name for it. There was no policy to help me figure it out. But I know that I've missed it. And so for them to be able to say that is huge. I mean, that's a huge win in terms of just creating this better world, right?
They could also have had us come in and train their staff, but not give us an opportunity to speak to the policymakers or to have brainstorming sessions with people who actually had the boots on the ground, but also leadership opportunity. They could have done this very differently, but they actively are interested, eager to hear how they can show up for children better and differently. Yep. That's a really big deal. And that has not been our experience, unfortunately, prior to now. When you look at 2 years ago, the system was failing Kate. 1 year ago, the system was failing Kate. This year, the system is actually opening doors so that other children don't have to start a podcast yep. to get help.
Some systems, lots of systems.
Some systems, right.
On, I don't know if it was Wednesday afternoon or Thursday.
It was Thursday.
Okay. In Boston. We sat there and we said to ourselves this whole idea of 2 years ago, 1 year ago, and here we sit today. And we are in such an amazing space and have the opportunity to do this. And so we sent an email to the leadership at Grace, the investigators at Grace, to John Sherholtz at Cornerstone Church on Grand Island, to the leadership at the chapel, including John Camardo and my brother, John Cook, and Jerry Gillis. And I'm going to read the email just because I feel like it's so well put. It says, "Good afternoon. We wanted to make you aware of the progress we've made in your absence. We spent this past Tuesday training 150 child protection staff in Boston, Massachusetts. Wednesday included a presentation to the commissioner and statewide managers, followed by a roundtable meeting with policymakers and boots on the ground leaders. It's unfortunate that you will forever be part of our story that we had to overcome rather than a part that moved us forward. But if you're ever interested in educating yourselves around this issue, we would be happy to help." And we genuinely mean that. None of them have responded.
We also, by the way, included all kinds of links for the research that we just cited to you.
Yeah.
So yeah, they can inform themselves.
Yes, they can. It's just an interesting space to be in. Like we said, veteran DCF workers saying, yes, please, we want to know. I mean, our emails have been flooded this week with connections to different places and things and symposiums and all the things, because the world at large is saying, yeah, we need to know more. We need to create a better safe space for these kids. But the places that we've already encountered are not interested in educating themselves further. So dope. which I was told by my kids to stop saying.
Kids will keep you honest.
Yeah. So that brings us to our call to action, I guess. And we don't do this a lot on podcasts. We usually kind of give the information and let people sit with it and do what they want to do. But Christiana, you know, everybody knows Christiana, saw a billboard about helping victims of abuse. And it said, "What are you doing to help?" And it had three boxes: thinking of you, check. Praying for you, check. Taking action, not checked. And it said, "What are you doing to help?" Right? So many, 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 many of our listeners have taken action. They have come alongside us. They have helped and they have donated and they have shown up. And we are forever grateful, because we would not be in these spaces creating this change had it not been for the support that we've always had. So we will literally never, ever, ever, I'm going to start crying, but, we will never be able to thank the people that have supported us along this journey enough. There will never be enough words. But the rest of the story is that there's an entire generations of kids that are coming after us that need that support too.
And can I say, many women who are survivors who also need the world to come along and acknowledge the enormity of what they've lived through.
Yep. We need to have change happen. There has to be a change in the systems in place. There needs to be safe adults that can hold space for this kind of thing. Education and training is a must because, as we said, Michael Salter's book, if you don't even believe or know that it happens, you'll miss it when it's standing right in front of you. So our question to the world at large is, what are you doing to make sure that people know? What are you doing to make sure that education and training around this issue of organized abuse and family-controlled trafficking is happening? We're happy to help. Obviously, we have our new nonprofit, which, by the way, we just got 501c3 status for.
Woo-hoo! It's official.
We're officially official. So obviously, yeah, we're not here to really promote that necessarily, but we are here to say, hey, we're here to help, right? If you want education and training, or you want to share what you know from the podcast with other people, please reach out to us. We're happy to facilitate anything we can to be able to help. So what a wild dichotomy of 2 years ago this week in October, 1 year ago this week in October, and this year, this past week of October. So yeah.
Thank you all for helping make it possible.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And thank you always for your support and for listening. Until next time.
If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.